we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting scene in The Guardian, read by Vaughan Savage.
An Australian academic has just completed 17 years of painstaking research, finding the country's worst beach. Of the 70-odd beaches which receive the most dangerous rating of 10, the only one that has a name is aptly called Termination Beach, near Cape Catastrophe.
Thanks to Tom Colebrook of Hampstead for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and newcomer Jack Dee. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Linda Smith. Andy, whose constitution was weakened by a constitutional punch-up this week?
Well, it falls to me to defend Tony Blair, the People's Prime Minister, from some quite ludicrous criticism that he's received this week from various commentators and journalists, all saying that he would be terribly embarrassed by the fact that he had to make this complete turnaround about having a referendum on Europe. But I'm proud to say that it would take a lot more than that to embarrass our Prime Minister. He has got a very high embarrassment threshold, which is common to most Prime Ministers, and he has announced a referendum. Actually, he didn't use the word referendum, I noticed, although I think it might have been there in a cough. I think he might have gone, referendum! But he said that, it's time to challenge some of the myths that are being perpetrated about Europe. You know, things like the fact that if we agree to this constitution, then Germans will have the right to come over here and eat the Queen and stuff like that. But perhaps the most alarming moment of the whole thing was Michael Howard saying that he challenged Tony Blair to a live TV debate on the constitution of the European Union. And if you listen very carefully, you could hear hundreds of TV executives all around the country going, no!
Oh, Andy, sure, that sounds top-line entertainment when lawyers slightly disagree.
I wonder how many listeners know that today's programme is going out on St George's Day. I just thought I'd put that in from the old generation. As an Englishman, it's a very good time to have the referendum.
It's a great shame we're not allowed to celebrate it in the way we ought to, because I was in Aylesbury and I read in the local paper that the pub run there had been refused permission to celebrate St George's Day, which is very sad, because all they wanted was to have extended licensing hours and set fire to an asylum seeker.
It also concerned the Prime Minister's reversal of policy on the European Union and the fact that there will be a referendum on the Constitution. During Prime Minister's questions, Mr Blair locked horns with Michael Howard, which disappointed the Tory leader as he'd had his fangs specially sharpened. So, Jack, welcome to the news quiz. Why has a load of oil given the UN food for thought?
This is because the oil for food deal in Iraq that was during the sanctions between the Iraq wars has gone awry. The money's gone missing, and it's a shock for everyone to learn and have to take in this information that there was in fact corruption at the heart of the Saddam Hussein administration. But it's apparently £60 billion worth of money's gone somewhere, and it seems to be that Saddam Hussein is blaming his PA. Curiously, at the same time, Shell have said they haven't got as much oil as they said they had. So it's very, very difficult to know exactly what is going on. But it was it's France, or the French government, and the Russian government, and the office of Vladimir Putin has come under question. And I always thought he looked like such a nice guy.
I think they should have guessed, really, that aid to Iraq wasn't going in quite the right direction when Saddam said, can I just have it in weapons tokens, please? And that'll be my Christmas and my birthday.
It's the unravelling scandal of the UN-administered Iraqi food for oil scheme, under which Saddam Hussein and his cronies are alleged to have made billions in illicit gains. Matters were tightened up in 2002 when, in a move to prevent oil crossing the border, Robert Kilroy Silk was denied a passport. During the years in which the scheme operated, Saddam took billions from the pockets of his people. In this country, we call someone who does that Chancellor. Linda, who has said I do to ID?
Ah, this is this our deliciously stern Home Secretary again. Would that be David Blunkett? Does he still write to you, Simon?
Yes, he does.
Even since the injunction? I caught him going through my bins the other day. I know he likes the show, but really. Well, yes, this is what it is. But it's not only him, isn't it? That there's a poll of some people which suggested that, rather depressingly, 50% of the people polled weren't that bothered about any civil rights infringements to themselves of the identity cards, which proves once and for all that British people are pathetic. That if there were some kind of fascist coup, we'd just go into the trucks, wouldn't we? As long as we could get the mail on Sunday, they really wouldn't care. And Harry Potter, they really wouldn't care. So that's what it is, isn't it? It's this ID card malarkey again.
I see on the card you're going to have, they had a mock-up of it, and in the corner it had that there would be biometric proof of your identity. What's that? Is that a photograph?
It's eye measurement. Those of us of a certain generation have had cataracts done, and I can't look at the audience because it'll drive four of them blind when it flashes. Very funny eyes, these, aren't they? So biometric is simply it's a certain sort of distance between the retina and the...
So how does a policeman check that? He stops you, he says, right, all right, Mr. D, hang on, right, hang on, is that your eye? Would they hold it up against your eye or something? What do they do?
Well, what they should really do is actually measure the distance between your eyes. It's always been a very reliable measurement for me. I always stick with that. The ID card is, of course, coming in because of the terrible emergency, which actually means it's really an identity crisis card for everyone. In fact, I think the better idea would be to have a sort of national loyalty card like you have in a supermarket, so that you get points. There's an incentive scheme. If you don't commit an atrocity for 2 months, then you get, I don't know, a meal for two at Harvester. No, David Blunkett, he just gets madder and madder all the time, doesn't he? He's quite fantastic. I mean, before long, he's just going to come out and say, you know, that all babies have to have their hands cut off at birth to prevent any future crime.
According to a new poll, 80% of the public support the introduction of ID cards as long as they don't have to pay for them. Blunkett has revealed that he will offer the elderly concessions on their mandatory ID cards. They'll be given 15 minutes to remember where they put it before they're tagged, fined, and sent to an offshore holding facility. 2 points to Linda. Alan, listen to this.
It's sad, so sad. Why can't we talk it over? Oh, it seems to me that sorry seems to be the hardest word.
Whose sorry words were wholly indecipherable this week.
This is a ecclesiastical question.
It is.
It's a question you don't know the answer to, isn't
it's
it?
It's a question I don't know the answer to. It's not the Archbishop of Canterbury and Tony Blair.
It is.
Well, that's it. Yep. I didn't know the answer to.
Correct.
See? It was about Tony Blair. He accused him of being in the pay of spin doctors, and democracy didn't exist in Tony Blair's mind, and it certainly didn't exist in his mouth, and what had been put in his mouth were foul prophecies by evil men.
But number
the
10
the Archbishop of Canterbury, he's got that kind of beardy sort of look that lots of middle-aged sort of liberal-ish men have. It's somewhere between Terry Pratchett and Harold Shipman, isn't it?
I think Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, actually, I think he looks like Robin Cook on a full moon.
I thought, oh, Robin Cook doing a full moon. Yeah. What amused me was that number 10's response was that they said that they thought the Archbishop's remarks were elliptical.
Yeah,
yes. You thought, I thought they were fairly clear.
Well, I looked up elliptical and it said egg-shaped.
Right.
The Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, suggested the government's handling of the Iraq war has resulted in a loss of trust in the nation's political system. Rowan Williams was previously the Primate of Wales, and he became Archbishop of Canterbury despite his lack of opposable thumbs. And at the end of round one, everybody is level. Yes! And we start round two with a cutting from the Daily Telegraph sports section.
Northampton versus Bath. Northampton's plans have been hindered by a stomach bug which has been sweeping through the squad, and they will not select until after the captain's run today.
Thanks to Andy Crompton of Bristol for that. Andy, who's becoming highly vocal about staying young.
Jack knows. I do. Even though you referred to him at the opening of the show as newcomer, which I thought sounded a bit like a Suffolk village.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that it's the first time I've read the papers.
No. It's bad enough for Jack trying not to be overwhelmed by the glamour of doing the show. But anyway, my teammate Jack knows the answer to this.
It's about people can they have voice lifts. You can pay money just like cosmetic surgery, but now you can have your voice raised a few octaves to make yourself sound younger. It's not a complicated procedure. It's done under a quick anaesthetic, and the surgeon climbs on the table and kicks you very hard. And Bob's your uncle.
It's much better that way for the joke, because what they're actually doing is making your voice lower, because old men's voices go up.
So it's a voice down, it's not a voice lift.
Voice down, yeah.
So you, as you get older, you start talking.
Yeah, you start talking. Yeah.
And you don't want that?
No.
I mean, why bother? Everyone knows you're old, and that's why it's happened.
A procedure called the vocal lift makes older people sound younger, and it's becoming increasingly popular in the States. If vocal lifts catch on, old people will sound like young people, resulting in groups of OAPs gossiping about how Dame Vera Lynn is well fit, colostomy bags are way uncool, and illegal immigrants are totally bogus, dude. 2 points to Andy. Jack, who has made a name for herself in the long run?
This is the wonderful Tracy Morris in the marathon, isn't it? Who came in and she ran the marathon in under 4 minutes, and it was... No, I think she's a real hero, actually. It's just wonderful that she did that, and that we didn't actually have to see the photographs of people dressed as rhinoceroses running the marathon, because that really is... I don't know what is the kindest way to deal with someone who thinks that it's a good idea to run round London dressed as an alarm clock, and that it's an excusable thing to do just because it's raising money for charity. A charity that no doubt they're going to need at some point. Her second marathon, and now she's off to Greece for the Olympics there, and she's saying that she's totally unprepared, as indeed is Greece.
I think they should have a clamp down on the silly costumes, because someone ran it dressed as Jeffrey Archer. It's just... But
what happened to the money they raised for charity?
I love the advice from Paula Radcliffe in her column, which was, don't try and do things too fast.
Hang on, you read Paula Radcliffe's column?
So she's got a column about running.
Yeah. She? Paula Radcliffe?
Yeah.
What do you expect her to write about?
I think Alan's feeling threatened that Paula Radcliffe's after his column now.
A whimsical look at running.
Tracy Morris has qualified for the Olympic Games after becoming the first Briton to complete this year's London Marathon, despite taking up running seriously just 18 months ago. Ms. Morris attributed her success to training. Every day she takes a train to work, every day it breaks down, every day she has to run 26 miles instead. Linda, listen to this. Linda, who's been nicking money by the DeLorry load?
Ah, this will be Joity DeLorry. who's actually rather spectacularly ripped off Goldman Sachs for many, many millions. And it's reading the court report, she was nicking money. Her mother was laundering the money. It's like an Ealing comedy. Her husband's Alec Guinness, who's off to Paris with a load of Eiffel Towers that are really made of gold. Astonishing. She's made off with about 4 million odd. And her husband, when asked, you know, whether he noticed this, said, "I don't look in my wife's handbag." Goldman Sachs, it's hard to feel too much sympathy for them, given that they didn't notice 4 million quid had gone adrift.
It was one of those things in which you can't take sides. I mean, it's like when Hamilton sued Al Fayed. Oh, I don't care.
Exactly. But rather tragically, they described her as the best secretary they'd ever had. So I don't know what the others would like. You know, they nicked 4 million but wouldn't make them a cup of coffee.
She spent all this money on Aston Martins and Cartier jewellery, but there is £1.2 million that is unaccounted for.
Good.
Although it is fairly obvious she spent it all on cake.
Georgie Delory, a secretary at Goldman Sachs, has been convicted of stealing £4.5 million from her bosses without them even noticing. As part of her lifestyle, Delory bought herself several homes and a fleet of luxury cars. Psychiatrists believe she may have been indulging a deep-seated fantasy of being John Prescott. 2 points to Linda. Alan, how did the Incy Wincy spider manage to climb up the water spout then?
They've discovered what a spider has on its feet, other than bits of fly. It can carry 170 times its own weight, which is why it can be on ceilings. So I believe they are extracting this thing, let's call it GS7 or whatever, so that we can all do it.
The comparison that the scientists gave up was that it's the equivalent of a Spider-Man hanging off a ceiling with 170 human beings hanging off his back. And I just thought, well, how seriously are we meant to take a scientist who thinks that Spider-Man actually exists?
Yeah.
Scientists in Germany and Switzerland have uncovered the secret of spiders' ability to walk on walls, intermolecular forces generated by hundreds of thousands of tiny hairs on their feet. The team carrying out the study said they were amazed at the creature's ability to hang upside down for hours on end, and were astonished when it became leader of the opposition. So at the end of round two, everybody's still level. And before we start the final round, here's a cutting scene in the Times.
Eileen O'Neill, 74, a veteran runner from Whitley, came last in the Reading half marathon after stopping to use a portable toilet. Mrs. O'Neill was delayed as the loo she was occupying was hoisted onto a lorry.
Thanks to Jane Shelford for that. Andy, listen to this. Andy, who's been acquitted of sleep, perchance to dream of winning.
This is the story of a man. He's been banned from his favourite football ground because he fell asleep during a Middlesbrough-Arsenal game at Middlesbrough, where Middlesbrough lost 4-0. They're alleging that he was terribly drunk, and that's why he fell asleep. Although, why they've got a problem with a sleeping drunk, I mean, I don't know. So if a drunk wakes up and starts a fight, surely that you step in. But, yeah, he said that he wasn't drunk. He was exhausted. He'd worked a very long shift, and he was watching Middlesbrough. And he's also drawn attention to various design defects in that stand, like it was built facing the pitch and stuff. And the judge, somebody said, oh, it's not a surprise. He fell asleep, he was watching Arsenal, which showed that the judge hadn't watched any football for about the last 15 years.
No, apparently the judge
was a Middlesbrough
supporter. A season ticket holder.
Was he?
To the bar.
But, is that right? Is that right that a Middlesbrough fan passes judgment on another Middlesbrough fan? Surely he should declare
an interest. There's only two of them. I mean,
A soccer fan banned from his team's ground after falling asleep during a match had his conviction overturned this week by a judge who supports the same team. And a judge who supports the same team is referred to in legal parlance as a Hutton. Jack, who's learning the unarmed Highland fling to protect their Highland bling.
There's concern that poor naive youngsters up in the Highlands of Scotland, when they get to university and they go to the big city, they get mugged as soon as they arrive. And there's no mention of the fact that absolutely everyone gets mugged as soon as they arrive. And anyway, they're students anyway, so what's the problem? But it's they think it's only fair to wise them up to this, toughen them up before they go away from the Highlands. And so the SAS have been called in to give them training. So that's money well spent, isn't it?
Yeah. So we can have these extremely tough Highlanders coming down to London. If you stop them late at night just to have a chat, they're going to kill you with a rabbit punch or something.
They actually will attack you before you've even thought of attacking them. Because that's how the SAS work.
Also, they toss the caber and stuff like that.
All students do, yeah.
Students at a Highland school are to be given a course in urban survival to prepare them for life at university. Nearly a third of students become victims of crime in their first year. Many are hoodwinked into paying several grand in tuition fees for a degree in media studies. Two points there. Linda, why is the toy world facing the wind of change?
Oh, this is a robot called Robo Sapien. Mm-hmm. Japanese scientists have got this robot that is going to be a big craze as a toy because it does everything. It laughs and moans and farts, apparently. It's this farting robot. So at last, an end to no farting robot misery. For us all, just what we need. And it's only 80 quid, so there you are.
It can do everything, this robot. It can apparently dance and twist and spin and kick and lift weights off the ground. So, you know, just like anyone, you're going to let one off eventually, aren't you, doing all that?
Robo Sapien is a 14-inch tall humanoid robot which can walk, talk and even fart. What with dogs that wet themselves and robots that constantly break wind, the toy shop of 2004 looks more than ever like an old folks' home.
Kind of like the idea of these robots going, you smelt it, you dealt it. He who denied it, in fact, supplied it.
Alan, why has the fat lady sung for sexism?
I mean, Linda, the thin lady, is writing something.
That. Yeah. Oh, Linda, you should do it. Oh, you mean you can't say darling anymore at the opera? It's the ENO at the Colosseum. And yes, it was perceived to be sexist to call people darling.
There's a difference, isn't there, between the nature of the darling, surely. I mean, there's... I mean,
darling.
You do it like, you know, someone off on the buses. You're like, darling, that's sort of maybe sexist. But if you're John Gielgud and you call someone darling, that's... Well, it'd probably lead to a criminal prosecution. When it's a life lesson, but, I mean...
And there, as you say, there's a difference, isn't there? There's a difference, you know, people who are working together and have a good working relationship, they call each other darling, and then someone making horrible phone calls and go, hello, darling. Colour underwear you got on.
I'll recognise that voice. Chilling. Chilling moment.
Worse than darling is sweetheart. On EastEnders they call each other sweetheart. It's like a vegetable version of Braveheart.
Yeah. I don't like being called ducky though.
Ducky?
I don't like being called ducky.
Who calls you ducky?
Well, someone once called me ducky.
Dead now.
Don't do that again. I told you it's darling.
There was a question about the English National Opera, where people have been banned from using the word darling when addressing their colleagues. Use of names such as darling is very offensive to many people, especially if it's preceded by the word Alistair. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, this is was sent in by Jane Lloyd. Yeah, this is an announcement by a tube train driver to his passengers. Please move all baggage away from the doors. Please move all belongings away from the doors. This is a personal message to the man in the brown suit wearing glasses at the rear of the train. Put the pie down, Four Eyes. And move your bloody golf clubs away from the door before I come down there and shove them up your arse side.
Jack.
Being a newcomer, I thought I'd choose a cutting that I can only assume was sent in by a newcomer listener to the show. Richard Pedder has very kindly sent this in from the Bridgewater Mercury, and it's a funny picture. I'm awfully sorry, it's upside down.
Digital viewers, press your red button now. Linda.
This was sent in by Adam Greenwood, and it's from the BBC online news site. Police to interview mass killers. The police want to interview every serial killer in Britain in an attempt to identify how they avoid capture.
Alan.
Quietly, this is from the Coolsden Advertiser, Simon. We wish to apologise to all our readers for any offence inadvertently given by a typographical error in last week's review of BBC One's Holby City. The line should, of course, have read, "A nod is as good as a wink."
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores, which is everybody has the same number of points. Well done. Yay! Before we leave you, here's an item from the Peak District magazine.
Walks, Langset Barn to the Forgotten Farms, a 6-mile walk to look at farms that have disappeared.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Jack D, Linda Smith and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggett, and the news was read by me, Vaughan Savage. The chairman's script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and George Coles. The team scores were kept by Marika Good, and the producer was Simon Nichols.